Chapter 3. The Design of the Decision-Making Process. The chapter opens with a model that gives an overview of the three basic decision-making designs. Design 1, the manager alone devises and formulates solutions. Design 2, the manager presents the proposed solution or solutions and asks staff to qualify it or qualify them. Design 3, the manager asks staff to develop solutions. I now continue reading from the text. Involvement in and design of decision-making processes. In this section, I will look at the concept of involvement, which is a key element in both fair process management literature and systemic management literature, but still lacks a nuanced set of terms for ideal types of involvement. Why involve? When the organization members are involved in qualifying and implementing strategy, they have very real influence on and responsibility for developing solutions that can function in their everyday work. A decision-making process with a high degree of involvement increases the likelihood that the final solution will be a good one in relation to the employee's own daily work. From the manager's perspective, it increases the likelihood of a fast, high-quality implementation. The benefits of involving employees in decisions that are important to the work have long been known. Take, for example, Tannenbaum and Schmidt's article in Harvard Business Review in 1958, reprinted in 1973, How to Choose a Leadership Pattern. Here they write, most research and experience of recent years, that is, prior to 1958, gives a strong factual basis to the theory that a fairly high degree of employee involvement in decision-making is associated with 1. Raising the level of employee motivation, 2. Increasing the readiness of subordinates to accept change, 3. Improving the quality of all managerial decisions, 4. Developing team morale, 5. Furthering the individual employee's development. End of quote. Benefits of involving employees in the development of solutions to the organization's challenges still apply today. See, for example, the McKinsey study from 2010 mentioned at the beginning of the book. When employees are involved in driving the change and have ownership in the objective of the change, the success rate rises from 30% to an impressive 79%. These results match those of fair process research. Kim and Maubonnier charted the dynamics in fair and unfair process and the three practical principles that allow for such dynamics. In companies and public organizations where change is the norm, fair process can be the key to successful change efforts, innovation and strategy implementation. Models for involvement in decision making. In fair process, involvement is key, but the literature does not present a nuanced set of terms for involvement. Therefore, I have revised Tannenbaum and Schmidt's model for manager and subordinate influence on the development of solutions and decisions. The model for ideal typical decision-making processes clarifies the concept of involvement and shows 8 decision-making designs ranging from no involvement to involvement with agency, between which the manager can alternate in a change process. I have presented the model to 200 leaders whom I have trained in fair process to validate that the 8 designs reflect designs often used in practice. I have divided these 8 ideal typical decision-making designs into 3 main categories. Designs 1 to 3. Design 1, The manager alone devises and formulates solutions. Design 2. The manager presents the proposed solutions and asks staff to qualify them. Design 3. The manager asks staff to develop solutions. In all three designs, the manager stakes out the framework and direction for the change. By doing so, staking out the direction and framework for the change, the manager keeps in control. The difference between the three main designs lies in the manager's and employees' positions in the development of solutions. What influence does the manager allow the employees in the crafting of solutions to the major challenges? And what positions must the manager assume in the process to aid in the development of solutions? I will now illustrate the three main categories of decision-making process design in practice. In all three categories, management defines the framework and direction for the change. Case: decision-making process design in practice. Now I will show how a manager can use each of the three process designs to address the same challenge. Specifically, I will take the case of a school principal's challenges. So the three designs we'll go through is design 1, the manager alone devises and formulates solutions. Design 2, the manager presents a proposed solution and asks staff to qualify it. And design 3, the manager asks staff to develop solutions. The school principal has a number of conditions that have to be met. The DF terms that cannot be changed is as follows. Inclusion is to be applied and several pupils from special education are to be included in regular classes. Expenses for special education are to be reduced by X percent. The general output from teaching must be increased. The principal can choose to adopt design 1. Alone or together with the rest of school management, the principal concludes from analysis that the school should implement the LP model, school development method, as a solution to the conditions in the theft terms. At a school-wide meeting, the principal sets the context, that is, outlines the theory of terms, what is fixed and cannot be changed, and what direction are we headed, announces the decision, and explains his rationale for his choice of solution, and allows time for questions. Clarifying questions. The principal also chooses to give employees easy access to the reports that form the basis for the management's deliberation and decision. That was the end of the design 1 approach. The design 2 approach. The school principal can choose to adopt design 2. The school management concludes from analysis that there are three potential solutions: the LP model, the ICDP model, and the Canadian school development model. Common to all the solutions is that A, they are evidence-based, that is, they are tested on a larger scale with the results documented by researchers. B, they are directly applicable within the school's framework. C, they can resolve the challenges existing within the FIEF's terms. Here, management also sets the context by clarifying the framework and direction that the solutions must live up to, presents the three potential solutions and asks the employees to qualify the solutions. The employees discuss in a structured process what are the advantages and disadvantages of the three solutions, what do we believe in the most and why. Employees' qualification of solution guides but does not dictate management's choice of a solution. It is still management who decides. Design 2 is also used to revise and improve a proposed solution. End of design 2. Design 3. The school principal can choose to adopt design 3. The school's management sets the context by announcing the framework and direction for the change. Management invites the employees into a process where they are to point to and develop solutions that live up to the framework and direction of the change. Thereafter, management decides which solution proposals to implement. This is the end of design 3. However, there is a variation that you might want to know. Management invites the employees, in form of a smaller work group, into a process where they are to point to solutions. That is a design 3. Next, the proposed solutions are presented to the broader group of employees for qualification. That is a design 2. So note how management combines designs 3 and 2 to optimize the relationship between value-adding involvement and minimal use of employees' time. Note that in the case, all three decision-making designs will allow for the employees to be involved later on in the development and testing of specific solutions when the conceptual basis is to be adopted in practice. The decision-making process described in the case has solely been about which conceptual basis is to serve as a framework for the innovation work. Even if design 1 were chosen above in the case, you could still create a fair process for the specific development and testing of solutions on the conceptual basis. For example, the LP model that has become the framework for the innovation process. End of case. Reference model for decision-making processes. I will now present the 8 variants of the decision-making process design. In design 1, the manager devises and announces the decision or solutions for implementation. I have conceived 3 variants, where variant A focuses on announcing the solutions, B also focuses on explaining the rationale behind the decision. Both A and B involve one-way communication. And variant C also focuses on creating a feedback loop to establish whether the organization members have understood the message in the manner that the manager intended. In practice, this can be done by allowing time for clarifying questions. In design 2, management presents its anticipated decision as a proposal. I have devised 3 variants. The first solely focuses on gathering the employees' substantiated views on the proposed solution. The 2 others focus on the organization members qualifying the management's selection of a solution by contributing suggestions for improvement. In design 2B, 1 possible solution is presented. In design 2C, at least 2 or more competing solutions are presented. In all 3 variants, that is 2A, 2B, and 2C, the manager sets the framework and direction for the expected decision and explains the rationale for putting forward the chosen solutions or the proposed solutions. In 2B and 2C, organization members are given a role in which they qualify solutions, primarily by discussing the advantages and disadvantages of the potential solutions and how they can be improved. Their qualification guides but does not dictate management's decision. Variants of design 2 focus on organization members qualifying the manager's choice of a solution and on initiating them in the management perspective, direction and framework for the solution. In design 3, the manager sets the framework and direction for the change but refrains from pointing to any specific solutions. The role of the organization's members is to develop, test and later on implement solutions that realize or implement the strategy. I differentiate between 2 variants. 3A, where management chooses which of the solutions proposed by the organization members to test and which to implement. And design 3B, where the organization members choose which solutions to test and implement within the framework and direction defined by management. Note that the theoretical assumption is that agency is not something one has, but something that is created through the manager's process management. The choice of decision-making design is critical. It is beginning with design 2B that organization members are invited into agency positions. A note, in the book there is now presented a reference model for design of the decision-making process. The visual model sums up the points that have been delivered so far regarding the reference model for the design of decision-making processes. I now continue reading from the book. Positioning and agency in the individual designs. In variants of design 1, where the manager alone defines the framework and direction and announces specific solutions to the employees, the employees are not positioned in an agency position. They are only positioned to receive and understand a decision and then execute it as instructed. In design 2A, the manager asks for the employees' views on a decision it is considering, but it does not position employees in an agency position. The employees are only asked to express their views on the decision being considered and possibly to explain the reasoning behind their views. Employees are not positioned to, for example, actively provide input as to how the envisaged decision could be qualified so it would work better, or what alternative solutions could resolve the strategic challenge. With this design, the manager invites employees into positions where, in principle, they can simply disagree without getting involved in how the strategic challenges to be addressed can be resolved. In design 2B, employees are invited into agency positions. They are to actively qualify the solution. How might it work in practice? How might it work better in practice? They are not merely asked to justify any disagreement like in design 2A. In design 2C, they are invited into agency positions with a slightly larger sphere of opportunities. Employees are to assess and actively qualify two or more competing solutions. The sphere of opportunities can be expanded if management allows the organization members to develop a third solution to compete with the potential solutions that the manager designated. This is a hybrid between design 2C and 3A. In design 3, employees are invited into agency positions. They're often professionally challenging. Here, they are to develop, test, and implement solution in the sphere of opportunities within the framework and direction that management defined, the sphere of terms. The highest degree of agency is required and sought in design 3B, where the organization members decide themselves which solutions to test and implement. In 3A, it is the manager who decides which of the organization members' proposals will be tested. In 3B, the organization members or a selection of the organization members try to reach consensus or put it to a vote. Case. The management level above me has created a design 1 process. Can I involve my staff at all? Yes, this is often possible. At design 1 process at senior management level can set the framework for some things, but can still leave a sphere of opportunities, which is a good occasion for innovation. Here's a case. At a school, the principal announces to the after-school care coordinator, who are leader of the pedagogues, that one of their large rooms would be converted to a classroom starting in the new school year. This is a design one decision-making process. The reason was a large influx of new students at the school. The conversion would, of course, have consequences for the after-school activities in the new school year. The after-school care coordinator, the head of the after-school care, viewed it as an opportunity to involve the employees in a revision of the activities and choose design 3B. There is hardly any innovation hidden in an involvement design 3 for room allocation, but there could be innovation potential in adapting the activities to the new conditions, the pedagogical activities. In the above case, one less room paved the way for more outdoor activities. The outdoor activities became more physical in nature than the more passive indoor activities. The after-school care staff later assessed that they have succeeded in creating a better balance between the offers of popular outdoor and indoor activities. The boys in particular were enthusiastic. Here ends the case. The management level above me has created a design one process. Can I involve my staff at all? Yes, you can. Choice of process design. Practical and ethical considerations. Does the plotted framework and direction for change allow for a real sphere of opportunity for employees developing solutions? Is the manager ready to choose process design 3? Are the employees? Process design and transparency. If the solution has been chosen in advance and is not up for discussion, then process design 1 is the only suitable design. It follows from the principle of transparency that the choice of design should reflect the actual manager-employee influence on the decision. That is the actual decision-making process design. It is a violation of the principle of transparency to organize a change process according to design 2 or 3 if management does not plan to collect qualified solution proposals or have solutions developed within the framework and direction for change defined by management. This leads us to the notion of false involvement. False involvement. The solutions that employees themselves come up with are most often those with the most ownership and therefore easier to implement, compared to solutions they have not designed or elected themselves. That realization can incite false involvement. A classic example of false involvement is when management involves employees in devising solutions to a given problem, even though management have decided on a solution, that is a design one disguised as design three. Employees are involved in the hope that one or more employees will come up with a solution that resembles that which management, without saying so, chose to be the conclusion of their involvement in the development of solutions. Stating that the solution came from the employees, the manager then announces his decision. When the employees suspect the manager of false involvement, confidence in the manager is diminished and the active and voluntary implementation is jeopardized. It is also a moral process selection that goes against the principle of transparency, where you say what you mean and mean what you say. Case: the manager and the meaningless and false involvement. A senior manager asked the department managers to come up with solutions to a difficult challenge. He stayed away from the meetings so as not to influence their proposals. when the senior manager received the proposals in writing, he crossed out 2/3 of them, revised the remaining proposals, and added 2 of his own. The department managers got no further explanation of the logic behind rejecting and revising specific proposals. They lost a considerable amount of confidence in the leader and did not take ownership of the solutions. The dynamics of unfair process were set in motion. The department managers viewed it as false involvement. They said, "The senior manager had already decided. He had merely hoped that we would come up with the same idea as him and that he could then present that he had actually listened to our suggestions." So, what can the senior manager do instead? The senior manager can take part in the developer meetings and begin by clarifying the direction and framework for the solution proposals, checking them regularly against the theory of terms. If some of the proposals are not realistic in relation to the theory of terms, the manager could say, for instance, "I can tell you straight away that proposals X and Y have no chance of success with the executive board because they are focused on blah, blah, blah." If the manager himself has any proposals, they too should be laid out along with the rationale behind them. The manager should be very clear with respect to the decision-making process, design 2 or 3, and the criteria for approving, revising, and rejecting proposals. This leads us to the next case, the manager who chose his own proposal. A manager involved his department managers in the development of solutions to a difficult challenge. He also presented his own proposal. In the end, he chose his own proposal because it was the best one. He offered no further explanation or rationale for choosing his own proposal and for rejecting the others. This was perceived as false involvement, where the manager had already chosen his own proposal and merely hoped that the department managers would support his idea and feel ownership and involved in the solution. Instead, he triggered the negative dynamics of an unfair process. What can the manager do instead? He can choose to be transparent regarding his preference. "Personally, I think that solution X is the most realistic because," explains rationale. Or, "I like solution X the best because," explains rationale again. "And I would like you to assess its advantages and disadvantages and what might improve the solution." This would be a design 2. Unless it turns out to be completely unwise, this is the solution we will test proceed with. The manager can also create a decision-making process that opens up for other solutions to come into play. For example, "If other solutions come up, I would like to hear it, but as a starting point, we will focus on proposal X." This would be a hybrid of designs 2 and 3. The principle of transparency and design 2 fits in better here with the actual sphere of opportunities the department managers have. Transparency will better allow the senior manager to position himself as someone they can trust, someone who is morally reliable. Is design 1 no-go in fair process? When design 1A to 2A are used along the way in the change process, it is not necessarily unfitting from a fair process perspective. Management must make many decisions, and not all decisions add value or should involve employees. If designs 1A to 2A are the dominant and most frequently used approaches, this does not allow for agency and the positive dynamics of fair process. If variants of design 1 are the most commonly used in important decisions, this opens up for an unfair process. The principle of involvement is violated, and that can trigger the negative dynamics whereby organization members lose faith in the management, their decisions, and the quality of the overall strategy. Employees will become passive or resistant to implementation of management's decisions. Note that we only say that an unfair process arises when one of the above-described principles are violated, and this results in the above-mentioned attitudes and actions. How to involve without losing control? With fair process tools, management has a platform for finding a balance between involvement and control. The change process, or fair process, is controlled by setting a clear framework and direction for the change. In order for an idea or proposal to be valid, it must at least correspond with the direction and framework of the change. And this is how you stay in control. There can be just as much outcome control in the combination of involvement and clear context setting of direction and framework for change, as in detailed dictated change. And the former will not unleash unfair process, while the latter probably will. So, direct your attention to the choice of process design and the other fair process tools for managing the process level of change. This book aims to provide you with a coherent theoretical and practical understanding of how to find a balance between involving staff in the development of solutions to strategically important challenges while maintaining control and momentum. You will gain insight into methods that support management styles that are involving, setting direction and framework, and are keen on coaching and facilitating the employees' thought processes. What about the management philosophy? Do you have a management philosophy that warrants adopting management styles and methods from fair process? Is fair process a management philosophy for you? Here's the philosophy. It is the manager's management of the process that determines whether employees have confidence in management, in decisions, and the strategy, and play an active role in resolving the important challenges. A premise of fair process is that the manager must truly believe that the employees are reliable and value-adding, and that they will also be when they are involved in developing and testing solutions to important challenges. If the manager does not believe this in a particular project, then a fair process approach is not the right approach in that case. If there are many such cases, fair process as a management philosophy, style, and specific method is not something that the manager will be able to practice successfully. The manager cannot imitate styles and methods from fair process. He will be caught, and the positive dynamics of fair process, trust and active development and implementation, will not be established. Fair process constitutes management styles that are 1. Direction and framework setting with a real sphere of opportunity for development, testing and implementation of solutions. 2. Involving, most so in design 3 then 2. 3. Rich on coaching and facilitation. Coaching and facilitation involves setting the framework for thought-provoking discussions, controlling the process level in the discussions, asking open-ended questions that trigger reflection, and truly listening to what is being said. In the life of a manager, there are decisions in all three categories. 1, 2, and 3. If the manager often prefers design 1 and rarely design 3 to deal with important challenges, and he has a management philosophy that is not clearly anchored in fair process, then the manager will never be able to create the positive dynamics of fair process. Fair process as a management model is only relevant for managers who are clearly anchored in the management philosophy. Is a project suitable for involvement and innovation? Imagine that the levels of management above you decided that your department must assume new tasks and practices. If employees have a real sphere of opportunities to qualify or develop solutions, for example, to, well, how specifically should the new work process be shaped in a real company so that everything works as intended, then involvement according to design 2 or 3 is a possibility. If instead the sphere of opportunities is very narrow with detailed practical instructions for new methods and practices, then involvement may not be fitting. It would be false involvement. Here, decision 1, design 1, C may be much more useful and honest. In 1C, management presents the decision, explains the rationale for the decision, and allows time for clarifying questions. The basis for involvement is important challenges that affect employees' work. Challenges where management believes that employees can make an important contribution to the qualification or development of solutions. At the same time, involvement can help employees see the challenge and possible solutions from multiple relevant perspectives, which is often conducive to a qualified choice of solutions and quality and speed of implementation. It is a chance for the manager as well to see the challenge and possible solutions from numerous other perspectives by involving the employees. Are the employees ready for involvement? It is not all employees in all situations that necessarily want to be involved. There is a big difference between involvement in design 2A, where employees alone express their views, maybe substantiating them when relevant, on the solution that management plans to decide on, and design 3A or 3B, where employees actually work out and work on a solution on how the department can resolve the strategic challenges. If the employees have for years been used to management styles primarily anchored in design 1, it may be too great a leap to design 3, when important challenges need to be addressed. A well-intended attempt may result in reactions such as, "Now she's trying to pass on the responsibility of finding a solution. Isn't that what she is paid to do as a manager? She should come up with the solution herself." The manager's best bet here is not to give them design 1, but instead to craft a variant of the design 2 decision-making process, that is 1-2A, 2B or 2C. The process goal is to get the staff gradually used to more and more involvement in the solution of important strategic challenges. The aim is to develop a culture where employees work together to craft value-adding solutions. The choice of a decision-making process design is a tool for creating an innovative culture. The reference model, which categorizes involvement in 3 main categories with 8 subtypes, can guide the manager's involvement work and point to alternatives when variants of design 3 do not match the project or the level of readiness among employees or management. Other obstacles to employees wanting to get involved are challenges that they perceive as very complex or impossible to solve at their level within the given framework, or failure to see the challenges that management see. They will feel that they are forced to participate in meaningless involvement instead of completing their main job task. It is a good idea for management to judge whether they're right. Is the manager convinced that the employees, if they are engaged, will be able to lift the organization to a better place? If so, their involvement process will often lead to them also seeing these opportunities when they are invited into agency positions tied to designs 2B to 3B. Is the aim to be 3-2-1 heavy? Yes, is the clear answer from research. Management styles that are dominated by design 3 then 2, that is direction framework setting, involving and coaching, are conducive to agency and the positive dynamics of their process, including 1. Rapid development and implementation of high quality solutions, 2. Confidence or trust in management, the quality of the solutions and the strategy. Variants of design 3 and 2 train managers and employees to develop and maneuver within several relevant perspectives on challenges and solutions. It is often conducive to being able to make high-quality decisions that strengthens the bond of trust between management and employees and allow for quick and better implementation. Furthermore, it is conducive to employees' ability to desire to make regular relevant adjustments of the solution. The reason is that they are able to see the work from multiple perspectives and in multiple contexts, and are in a better position to assess what contexts are conflicting, sometimes referred to as dilemmas. Employees get an eye for the highest organizational context, which is usually reserved for managers. Employees in the public and private sector generally possess a higher level of expertise in the field in which they work. In much of their work, it is they who know most about what creates value and how, as well as what customers, citizens, and patients need. At the same time, management also has important and relevant perspectives, including the organization's needs, direction, and boundaries of change. Therefore, it is most often a requirement for a successful change process, that is, solutions that are implemented fast and add value, that involvement takes place together with a clear direction and framework. It is also a job for management to assess what designs, design 1, 2, or 3, for the decision-making process are relevant. Can fair process be used when there are cost-cutting layoffs on the horizon? The strategic process design for fair process, that is, fair process in 5 steps, is not designed for that type of situation. It can be difficult to motivate employees to innovate when they think they're on their way to being fired. However, over the years, a handful of management students have asked me that same tricky questions. But some has also challenged my answer. For example, a head dentist who was ordered to make such big cutbacks that it could not be done without a reduction in staff. The head dentist chose to be transparent about the situation and laid it out for the staff. The head dentist asked for their input as to how they could achieve cost reductions by changes in purchasing and work procedures, but that it could not be done without laying off 1 to 2 staff members, in his opinion. Among the employees, there was one person who wanted to retire early and 2 who wanted reduced hours, and the employees proposed new work procedures and less expensive purchasing. In the end, there was no need for layoffs, and employees became involved in developing and implementing solutions that produced savings without any deterioration in the quality of services. Should we use fair process to make work schedules? This is one of the questions I often get within the first hour when teaching students of management. Generally, my answer is no. Fair process and strategic process design focus on innovation, that is on involving employees in the development and testing of solutions that create value for citizens or customers. Employees should only be involved if the manager believes it will facilitate a process where they can collectively craft a better solution than the manager can on his own. Employees rarely have the professional competence required to make work schedules that are good for the organization. On the other hand, they have potential conflicts of interest. It is perhaps often better to apply design 1 or 2 and then to allow for evaluation and revision of the schedules after some number of weeks or months. Being able to redo decisions that turn out to be unsuitable in practice is also an important principle in the theory of process fairness. Should we almost always use designs 2 and 3? It is not suitable to use designs 2 and 3 in every decision and change. There may not be more than one solution. It may be that top management has set such a narrow framework and direction that there's nothing meaningful to involve staff in. Perhaps the subject is so trivial that it is meaningless for employees to spend their time and talent on finding a solution. After all, they have their daily work to think about. Conclusion. In this book, I presented to you the dynamics of fair process and unfair process and the three practical principles that allow you to create fair process. I converted fair process research to a strategic process design, that is fair process in 5 steps, for managers' process management and explained principles for managing the process level in each phase. Finally, in chapter 3, I presented a reference model for decision-making processes in a fair process perspective that can guide the manager in his choice of decision-making processes and creating an innovative fair process culture. I converted the fair process principle into a more practical theory. My hope is that project managers, managers of staff, and their superiors will use this practical theory for innovation and change management and increase their rate of success to 8 out of 10 rather than 3 to 5 out of 10. Here ends the book, Fair Process from Unpopular Changes to Employees Crafting Solutions by Bo Vestergaard.